history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are heroes around you, and there are stories just waiting to be told if we'll only take the time to ask a few questions and listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, we are educated, we're entertained. So often we are inspired by these memories from our greatest generation. And if you're fortunate enough to still have your dad around, I'm sure you did something pretty meaningful for him for Father's Day, right? But today we're going to hear about one son's determination to bring his father back to a place that holds great significance in that 94-year-old's life, a place where something he did nearly 80 years ago has allowed countless visitors to experience awe and amazement at the wonder of nature. Perhaps by the end of this program, you're going to want to visit that special spot as well. And if so, the timing is good because it's only accessible during the summer months. But I bet you never think of rounding up five football players to make a visit possible, as we're going to hear about today. My Father's Day thrill with my daughters this year was a visit to Yosemite National Park, where the legendary waterfalls are flowing fuller than anything I've ever seen. I think they need to change the name of the Mist Trail to the Fire Hose Trail, by the way. Yosemite's one of the busiest tourist attractions in the world, but not too far to the south are the not quite as well-known national parks called Sequoia and Kings Canyon, where one of the jaw-dropping attractions is a spot called Crystal Cave. Next year is going to mark the 100th anniversary of the cave's official discovery, although it very well could have been visited earlier by Native Americans. But before the Crystal Cave could become a real tourist attraction and a safe place for millions of families to visit, somebody had to make it more accessible using strategically placed dynamite to create passageways, install bathroom facilities, all kinds of things like that that visitors have probably taken for granted over the years. In 1940, a 17-year-old named Chester Chet Thomason was a major part of that important effort. He would go on to serve in the Navy, participate in some very historic moments in World War II, and even survive the sinking of his destroyer. After the war, he became an electrical contractor, moonlighting as the Electrifying Chet, the world's most astounding hypnotist. Later on, we're going to hear the memorable comment one Hollywood legend shared after witnessing Chet's show. But as colorful and fulfilling as his life has been, for many years he felt a longing to get back down inside that cave he had explored and helped shape as a teenager, a dream made possible just recently by a determined Vietnam veteran son who enlisted a junior college football team to pull off something he had tried to do on his own and come up frustratingly short. We're going to hear from that son. We'll even hear from the football players. But first, we're going to hear from this 94-year-old Navy veteran himself. Let's start early on, Chet. You're growing up in Porterville, California, in the agricultural Central Valley of California. What do you remember about your childhood there during the Great Depression?
Well, not too much. But orange groves. I grew up around orange groves. So we had Porterville.
Were you working in the orange groves, picking oranges?
No, I never did. Pick oranges. My dad had truck distributed boxes and picked them up. I had a stepbrother stack these boxes 12 high, so I'd holler out the cob drive truck down the middle of the grove, and I'd holler, two, 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 and he'd flip them off. If I said 10, he'd pick up the whole truckload.
Do you remember, as a boy, having some ideas, hey, when I grow up, I want to do this and this and this?
It's been a couple of years and some months ago. No.
Now, we're going to hear about how you ended up in the Navy, but there's something happened before the Navy that certainly ties into the most recent adventure you had. How'd you end up in the CCCs?
My stepmother, I had in that care much for me, so I had to get out of the house.
So you're 17 years old, and you go into the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Right.
They sent you up into the Sierra Nevada Mountains and Sequoia National Park?
Right.
What kind of stuff were you guys doing there?
Well, we was building walkways and roads and things like that. I don't know whether it's true or not, but they told me when I first got there an old Indian trick. Take a little bit of poison oak and chew on it. So I did. Took a little bit of poison oak and chew on it. And rub poison oak over me, and I was still immune to it.
So if we grab some poison oak right now and rub it on you, you'll have no reaction.
That's right.
What about when you chewed it? Did your tongue swell up?
Nope.
Nothing happened?
Nothing happened.
All right. You think I should try that?
It's up to you.
And what was the first you heard of this crystal cave they had there?
Something that I wanted to explore myself. So I crawled down the mountain, root by rock, hole, driving in the dirt to see what it was. And I found I was pretty far down.
And you made your way into the cave?
Yes. I found a way over the top of the... Out in front, they got a great big spider web, and you turn the spider, and you open the gate. But over the top, there's a little place that I get my thin body over the top of this place, take a string and land it and go back there at night, explore it.
Was that scary?
It was entertaining, I thought.
Well, anyone who's visited there, the Crystal Cave at Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks, knows what you're talking about with the spider web gate there. That's a big famous accoutrement. What's the story, though, about you and some other guys with the CCCs using explosives to create a new entrance or something?
Well, there was lava, solid lava. So the ranger taught me a little bit about using explosives. So I left them drill a little hole there and a little hole there and a little hole there. I put explosive in and I had a little generator that I carried by hand, and I'd fire the generator, blow a little hole, because we had to make a restroom for the women and a restroom for the men, and keep them separate. So I'd just blow a little bit at a time without blowing the whole thing, and the ranger taught me that.
So basically, this is a natural phenomenon that's been of interest for centuries, probably, when you think about Native American inhabitants and all that. But now it's going to become a tourist attraction, and your guys' job was to make it suitable for all those people coming in.
Right. Without knocking over any of the stalagmites, stalactites.
Yeah. You think they'd let you do that today? What you guys did?
I don't know.
How did you keep from blowing up parts of that cave that you wanted to keep intact?
We had 15-pound jackhammers and other people worked.
How long did it take you guys to finish that?
I don't know. Don't remember. It's been a couple of years and some months ago.
And it's not easy to get down to that crystal cave. I'm sure back then it wasn't easy. Did you guys have to build a road or a horse path or anything like that?
Build a horse path, and one horse fell over the bank, the real steep bank, and he just barely had a horse to. They used pack horses instead of pack mules.
Mm-hmm.
And the forestry used pack horses. One horse just barely got hoofs on the edge, back hoofs, and it fell down, had a rope tied around it, so it stopped the end of the rope, and I got it back up, and the packer, we called him Old Hoss, he came around and told me one of his horses fell off the cliff, So my dynamite was on him. He was packed up. So I went down and took a stick of dynamite and gave it a toss out in the canyon.
Well, we're getting a picture of how dangerous this work was nearly 80 years ago with a civilian conservation corps. Dangerous for people and animals alike. And we will definitely be coming back to Crystal Cave with the unique story of Chet's return. But let's talk about your time in the Navy, where you witnessed history that very few people still living saw with their own eyes, and even some history that most people have never heard of. What was it that made you want to join the Navy in 1940?
Well, I had a buddy that was in the Army. He came home, and he told me that they was loading real bullets, real bullets into their equipment. So I knew that there was a war coming. I did want to go in the Army, and I wanted a place to sleep and eat, so I decided the Navy was a place to be.
How'd you feel about them putting you on a tin can?
It was a ship, pretty big ship to be.
What was your first impression of that ship, the USS Monson?
I thought it was great.
And what was your role on the ship?
I was an electrician mate.
So that meant you had a lot of fix-it jobs, or what?
Right.
Now, I've read the history of your ship. I've interviewed another gentleman who was on it like you were when it was sunk in Iron Bottom Sound off of Guadalcanal. But I haven't talked to anyone who was on the Monson when it was out in the Atlantic escorting the famous USS Hornet.
Well, first I knew we went down to Trinidad to negotiate for a base. So I followed the Hornet down there. We had several 5-inch cannons on that destroyer, 5-inch 38.
They make a little noise when they go off, don't they?
You better believe it.
And you guys actually fired some of those before America was in World War II, didn't you?
Right.
How did that happen? Some people might be surprised to hear that. Can you explain that to us?
Yes. We was escorting convoys over to England, and then we come back. I was stationed 2 years up in Iceland, where we'd pick these convoys up and escort them across.
What about German submarines?
We sank 6 of German submarines.
Before America was ever in the war?
Right.
So you were at war before our country was?
Right.
Was that scary, to be on that ship in those conditions, not knowing where a sub's going to be and when it's going to pop up?
Nope. Just part of a day's work.
Corey pulled up a photo here, something that you witnessed before Pearl Harbor, your fellow destroyer, the Kearney. This is October 17th of 1941, and what did you see? What happened to the Kearney?
We went out and picked her up while we'd been down off in New York. We were down there taking on supplies. Yeah, the ship went out ahead of us, our sister ship. We got word that she got hit and 11 people was killed with a torpedo. So we hauled and catch up with her and tied her up alongside to the own hook.
When you see something like that, when you see a ship just like yours that gets torpedoed and you guys need to help save it, does it occur to you that you could be next?
Yep, she's part of her job.
How did you hear about what happened at Pearl Harbor, and what did that mean to you?
Didn't mean nothing to me, because I was already playing war when Pearl Harbor happened. I was already at war.
Yeah, so while most of America, this was a jolt and a shock, and wow, how could someone attack us? You've been in those conditions for quite a while already, for months.
Right.
Well, and in the months that followed Pearl Harbor, America was looking for ways to strike back at the Japanese, and one of the most significant from a morale standpoint was the Doolittle Raid on Tokyo. What do you know about that?
I was there.
That's what I thought. What do you remember? What can you tell me? Did you know what they were going to do?
No. My job was to keep the ship running.
Did you know they had B-25s aboard that ship?
Yeah, I saw them take off B-25s and just skim the water before I get up. Speed, you know, is cross your fingers. Come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, I've talked to some guys who are on the Hornet for that, and that's what they say. They weren't sure they were going to clear the water and actually get up off that short deck of the Hornet.
Right. We was maybe a couple hundred feet to the starboard.
Was that exciting? Were there cheers going up?
Yep.
But you don't know what's going to happen on the other end of that mission.
No.
And those guys didn't either.
No.
But, of course, we do now, and the true legend of the Doolittle Raid lives on. Of the 80 Doolittle Raiders who pulled off that incredible feat 75 years ago, at the time of this program, only one remains alive. And in today's guest, Chet Thomason, we have one of the last remaining survivors of the destroyer USS Monson, which would be sunk off of Guadalcanal in November of 1942. At age 94, Chet sometimes isn't as talkative as he used to be. He has good days and bad days, of course, but we are going to try to discuss the sinking of that ship, find out what he had to endure for 14 hours in the water after the flaming hulk of that destroyer went under. It was Friday the 13th, but Chet calls it his lucky day. And of course, we'll hear about the unforgettable day he got to spend at Crystal Cave in the fulfillment of a dream he wasn't sure would ever come true. You can find photos relating to Chet and his story at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this.